course, whose name is Explorations in String Theory. Although I like to think of it as advanced quantum field theory in the sense that what I will be telling you about, which will be mostly the ADS-CFT duality, ADS-CFT conjecture, as you probably heard, can be seen as a quantum field theory tool that will stay and will be present, if you want, in modern quantum field theory books. So it's an approach to string theory that we will cover in these lectures, which is a bit different from the one that I imagine you saw in the previous string theory course. So in the previous string theory course, I guess that the approach you have seen was to see string theory as a candidate for a theory of everything, a theory of strings that lives in 10 dimensions, and then we live in 4 dimensions, and the remaining 6 dimensions are curled, and we see the different strings as being the different string excitations as being the different possible particles, and so on. So ADS-CFT, on the other hand, we will see, will tell us that gauge theories, pretty much like QCD that describes the strong interaction, that gauge theories can be described in terms of string theories. And this is just the universal properties, as we will see, of gauge theories which have a large number of colors. Okay? So before we start, so basically let me just tell you the brief outline of the brief plan of these lectures. And in this first week, I would like to state the ADS-CFT conjecture. So we will try to arrive at this ADS-CFT duality. What's the motivation? Where does it come about? How could people have guessed such crazy duality, as we will see? Then, as a second topic, I want to discuss non-local observables and minimal surfaces. What are non-local observables in gauge theory? You probably haven't heard of many, but scattering amplitudes would be an example. Wilson loops, which is an object that I will define carefully in a few lectures, is another example. And these are very important observables. They probe confinement, for example, in gauge theories. And we will see that according to the ADS-CFT conjectures, these kind of observables at strong coupling, which is the regime of the gauge theory where normal tools are not applicable, at strong coupling, these non-local observables can be described by some minimal surfaces. And then we will go to local observables. What are local observables? Correlation functions. So we put some probes at point x1, x2, x3, and we consider the average of the fields at those three positions. So local correlation functions, so local observables, and integrability, which, as some of you have heard, the ones that went to my presentation, is a tool that allows us to perform exact computations in 2 dimensions, and we will see how they come about in 4-dimensional gauge theories. So my hope is that I can do this one in a bit less than 1 week, this a bit less than 5 days, so that I can have 7 days or so for the last point. But okay, a less optimistic and probably more realistic goal is that each of these points will take 1 week, and I will not cover as much as I want of the third point. So let's start with some cartoon of what string theory is. Before we go on. So first, of course, you all know that I'm Pedro, because you already had me as a lecturer in the very beginning. And I'm guessing that everyone checks the wiki, right? So you might have noticed that in the wiki, I added a couple of topics of stuff that I expect you to study before the lectures. So in particular, before Wednesday, I expect you to review what you have studied about non-abelian gauge theories and so on. What is a non-abelian gauge theory? Before Thursday, if I remember correctly, I asked you to remember that the entropy of a black hole is area over 4 and so on. So there are a couple of topics that it's not crucial that you know, but which will help you a great deal if you come to the lecture with a fresh memory on those topics. So try to check the wiki. I will always post there what I think would be useful for you to study before the lectures. So it's stuff that is not directly related to what, I, or which sometimes is not directly related to what I'm covering, but which will help a lot if you have those ideas clear. So some cartoons about what string theory is. First of all, as Freddy told you, we don't have yet a full, solid mathematical description of string theory as an unperturbative object, as some Lagrangian, here are the rules, now compute any possible scattering of strings using this unified Lagrangian. What we have is bits and pieces of the theory. What we have, for example, is perturbative string theory. So we define string theory by summing, say if we want to study how three strings scatter with each other. So what we do is we sum over all possible shapes that end on these three strings, plus we sum over surfaces which don't have the topology of a sphere with three punctures, but instead have some genus, have some hole in it, some handle, plus dot, dot, dot. So this, of course, this cartoon is what is the S matrix, what computes the S matrix for three strings, for the scattering of three strings. So what is it given by in a slightly less schematic form? So we sum over surfaces of a given genus, okay? So this is the sum there. So we have genus 0, genus 1, dot, dot, dot. Then we have G string to the power 2G minus 2. This is convention, the fact that I have there minus 2. So what is this G string? This is the string coupling that measures the probability for the strings to split and join. And then for a given genus, we integrate over all possible surfaces of that genus G. So we integrate over 2D surfaces of genus G. What do we integrate? We integrate e to the minus the string action, which is a two-dimensional conformal field theory. And then, in this case, for three strings, we consider the average of three operators, V1, V2, and V3, which are called vertex operators. Okay? Which are something like, which look like, typically they look like, say, e to the I k dot x. X depends on sigma and tau, which are the coordinates on the world sheet of the string. And then something, for example, k dot dx would be one example, something like that. So this is how a vertex operator, we inserting momenta case, it will look something like that. So what is this action here? What is this action here? So it will be something like, so first this here is, as I said, the string coupling. And this action would be some string tension times some integral of g mu nu of x, d alpha of x mu, d beta of x nu, h alpha beta. So this is an example where what is this? So this is the target space metric. Okay, so this index mu for the superstring runs from 0 to 9. We have 9 dimensions. And this metric, if you are in flat space, which was the case that you did in your lectures in the first course, this would be just eta mu nu. Right? And this h here is the world sheet metric. It's the world sheet metric. So the action would be something like this, plus then the metric is not the only massless field, the graviton is not the only massless field of string theory, so we can have other backgrounds. We can have also a so-called B field, B mu nu of x, d alpha x nu, d beta x nu. This one is contracted with the epsilon symbol. And then we also have phi, which is the dilaton, which again depends on x, times the Ricci scalar of the two-dimensional surface. Okay? So this would be the Ricci scalar. And again, all this G, B, and phi specifying is giving a given background. And in flat space, you probably studied a case where G is eta and you ignored B and phi. Okay, so, yes?
What about the fermionic part?
Yeah, that's good. Plus fermions. Excellent. Very good. Then there are the fermionic excitations. But for this purpose of considering these classical surfaces and moving and so on, the bosonic part is the most important one. But you are absolutely right. Then you have the fermionic excitations. But for now, let's ignore the fermions and just focus on this. Okay, so this is a background.
Question?
Yes?
Is this action is Euclidean action?
Euclidean?
Is this Euclidean action?
Yeah, for the purpose of defining, it's always better to have everything as Euclidean as possible. Well, let's say it's Euclidean, yeah. So what do we see? We see that string theory has two constants. There is G string, which is the string coupling. And we have the tension, which is normally 1 over 2 pi alpha prime, which is the string tension. Okay? But in fact, you can think a bit and realize that actually, strictly speaking, we can in fact even think of the string coupling as not being an independent constant. Because notice, what happens here? Here, we have a dilaton times a Ricci scalar, a two-dimensional Ricci scalar. But you know that integrating a two-dimensional Ricci scalar over a two-dimensional surface just gives the Euler characteristic of the surface, which is exactly 2g minus 2. Yeah? Is this a statement which is familiar to everyone? So integrating the two-dimensional Ricci curvature over a manifold just gives the Euler characteristic of that manifold in two dimensions. So actually, if I rescale phi by a constant, what it will amount is to redefining the string coupling. So I can think of the string coupling as coming from a constant expectation value of the dilaton. So if I put a constant expectation value of the dilaton, then these powers of G string, they will come automatically and they will be measured by the Ricci scalar. Okay? So phi going to phi plus delta phi redefines the coupling constant G string. So this is the first comment. What about the string tension? So the string coupling measures the cost of two strings splitting into two. What about the string tension? The string tension measures the quantum fluctuations of the string. So the string, even if it doesn't split, it oscillates. We sum over all possible trajectories that go from this initial condition to this final condition. And of course, we can have solutions that wiggle a lot and solutions that almost don't wiggle. And of course, this one would correspond to having a large string tension, so that fluctuations are suppressed, and this one would be a small tension. So what are the nicest What are some of the nicest features of string theory? Well, one of the very nice features of string theory is that different particles correspond to different vibration modes. So of course, this you have seen that if you consider different strings that are vibrating in different ways, seen from very far away, this is just a different point-like particle with a different energy, and I can interpret therefore as being a different particle for all that matters. So just a single string, because it can vibrate in many different ways, will automatically describe many particles. Another very nice thing of this diagram, of this string picture, is that, say, consider a diagram like this. It automatically comprises, it automatically computes all diagrams like this. This plus, plus. All these diagrams where you have, this would be the diagrams you would draw in field theory. In string theory, they are contained in a single worldsheet diagram, in a single string diagram. So a string diagram with genus 1 contains all these diagrams here that you would draw in field theory. So if you take string theory and take the limit where the string tension is used so that you describe point particles, and then you compute diagrams in field theory, you have to sum over all these diagrams, and they are automatically captured by string theory. So it's of great elegance that you just sum over the genus, but then for a given genus, all possible Feynman diagrams will be automatically contained within string theory. Also, as you know very well, these points, the dangerous points, so there are UV dangerous points, that appear when two points collide with each other. When two points in space-time collide with each other, you get UV divergences. You have divergences of quantum field theory. But string theory, you see, everything is smoothed out, so no such notion exists. There are no points which are approaching each other. Everything is very smoothed out. So there are no UV divergences in field theory. They do not exist in string theory. So string theory is a finite theory with automatically many particles, with many particles that is automatically UV finite and so on. So okay, so I don't expect actually for you to have seen everything that I wrote here. For example, I know for a fact that you did not speak about vertex operators, right? You did not, right? Am I right? But okay, but at least what I need you to be aware is that there is such picture of string theory. And actually we are not going to use any of it. All we are going to use is basically this cartoon here. Okay? So out of all this discussion, all I want you to keep in mind, all we will really use today, for example, and for the most of these lectures, is this cartoon that string theory is given by a sum of surfaces with different genus weighted by the string coupling. Okay? But, of course, I do recommend that you study, that you try to complement your background by studying what is, by trying to look at the literature and trying to see, to fill the gaps that you have now so that you can really understand what's written here. Okay? For that, for example, the first chapter of Green-Schwarz-Witten is mostly enough. And that's one of the points that I recommend that you study in the wiki. So there, the notion of vertex operator is introduced, the notion of integrating over conformal field theory, the coupling and the tension, all this is explained to some degree in really the first chapter of Green-Schwarz-Witten. So I do recommend that you have a look at it. So these vertex operators, there is one vertex operator J for each state in the spectrum. So you study the spectrum of string theory, the massless modes, the first excited modes, the Taakian, and so on, right? This you did study in your string theory course. What I'm telling is that there is a one-to-one map between an operator and one of those states that you studied, and then to compute the scattering of this state, you compute this expectation value. Okay? So string theory that describes strings in 10 dimensions. To study strings in 10 dimensions, we need to study two-dimensional conformal field theories of arbitrary genus. Okay? Two-dimension because we have sigma and tau of the string mapped into some target space. Okay? Is everything clear? Okay, so now I'll try to move this blackboard up. And I fail, as I was expecting. It doesn't go up. It should go up. Maybe now it goes up. Huh? Okay. Very good. Okay. So this was a bit, this contained some portion of hand waving because there is a lot of this that you don't know. So now I'll try to go to a very explicit stuff. Tomorrow we'll hand wave like crazy and then we'll go back to solid stuff. So there clearly will be a picture where this is the level of hand waving. Now we don't hand wave a lot, we'll be very, very rigorous. Then we'll hand wave like crazy to motivate ADS-CFT. Then hopefully we'll go down, then we'll be more or less solid, then there'll be some bump and so on. But you must be ready that tomorrow and the day after, the level of rigor will go down a lot because I will introduce the ADS-CFT conjecture and not the ADS-CFT theorem. So it will require some inspiration. Okay, but it's enough for today. So now we go to very, very simple stuff. And the very simple stuff that I want to show you is the following claim. And the claim is that string theory is a dual description of non-abelian gauge theories with a large number of colors. Okay, so let's start by studying the simplest possible non-abelian gauge theories you can imagine. So do you have some proposal for the simplest possible non-abelian gauge theories? Sorry? SU2. SU2 has two colors. Two is not large. More. Other proposals? SUN. SUN? What? SUN what? SUN? QCD. QCD is the simplest gauge theory, non-abelian gauge theory you can imagine. Oh, that definitely not for me. Okay, so first of all, QCD is a four-dimensional theory, right? So we could go at least to three and two dimensions. Typically, stuff is simpler in two dimensions. But okay, if we go to two dimensions, let's really go down. Let's go to zero dimensions. So let's consider zero-dimensional non-abelian gauge theories. Yes?
Do we have time or is it?
No, it's zero dimensions. This is space time. Okay? It's really simple. Okay? So let's consider zero dimensional non-abelian gauge theories, which are also known as so called matrix models. Because as we will see, the string theory description, it comes because of the large number of colors. And therefore has nothing to do, or it's not crucial, to discuss the dimensionality of space-time. It really, the string picture comes from the large number of colors. So what are matrix models? A matrix model is the following. You integrate, as the name says, over matrices. They don't depend on the position of space-time. It's not like integrating over a field that depends on space-time. You integrate over matrices. So these are n times n, let's say for concreteness, emission matrices. And then e to the minus some action that depends on the matrix, m. Okay, and let's suppose we want to compute some average. Then we integrate that times that average. And we divide by the same thing without anything. Well, this, if you want, is our definition. Okay, and what is this DM and what is this action? So this DM is just a product over, say, the diagonal elements, DMII. So this is an n squared times n squared measure. This is a, this contains n squared elements. So we multiply I equal 1 up to n, the diagonal elements. And then I smaller than j, d of real part of mij, product over I smaller than j, d of imaginary part of mij. Okay? Would you like to complain, why am I not integrating over I bigger than j? Sorry? Right, as Henrik said, the matrix is hermitian. So n, so only the independent variables are the diagonal and say the upper triangle. Then the lower triangle is just hermitian conjugate of the upper one. Right? Is it clear? We integrate over hermitian matrices, so this is what we mean. And what would this action be? So this action would be, there will be some coupling, 1 over 2 g string square. So with some insight, I already called this coupling G-string, okay? And then there will be some kinetic term, which now is just m squared. There are no space-time to take derivatives, just m squared. And then there is some potential. There can be some t3 over 3 times m cubed plus t4 over 4 times m to the 4 plus tak tak tak. And this we would call some potential that depends on M.
Question?
Yes?
Is this like a choice we made to take only the Hermitian matrices?
Yeah, this is a choice. Just for simplicity, I'm taking this H to be Hermitian, yeah. Okay, very good. So now I want to compute what are the Feynman diagrams. I want to learn how to compute averages in this Hermitian matrix model. But okay, as I promised, I want this part to be simple to compensate for the previous one. So I will remind you about some stuff about Gaussian integrals. So consider we have, because we will now, we'll then do Feynman diagrams here, and I want to derive the propagator and so on. Consider a partition, the partition function with a source, which is just integral dx e to the minus 1 half x dot a dot x plus j dot x over the same thing without current, e to the minus 1 half x dot a dot x, where x is equal to x1 xd, and of course dx is just dx1 dxd. Okay? So of course, how do I compute this? Well, it's very simple. I just complete the squares up here. And therefore, this is just e to the 1 half j dot a minus 1 dot j. Okay? So of course, just to be totally explicit, by this I mean xa, aab, xb, where a is a matrix. And then, of course, just by completing the squares, we derive this relation. And then this implies, now we can compute expectation values, xa, xb, by taking derivatives with respect to j and then setting j to 0. So we take derivative with respect to j, we bring down the j, and we put j to 0. We take another derivative and we put j to 0. And of course, we derive that this is nothing but a minus 1 element ab. We also derive that, of course, for any odd number, a1 xa to n plus 1, this is equal to 0. And finally, we derive Wick's theorem, which tells you that the expectation value a1 xa to n is equal to the sum over all possible pairings of product I equal 1 up to n, and then average x a sigma 2i minus 1 x a sigma 2i. So to compute an expectation value of several x's, I just contract the x's in all possible ways. Okay? Is everything clear here?
So
yes. What's your name?
Hjalmar.
Hjalmar, yes.
Yeah. Why was the expectation value of xa1 to xa2n plus 1?
Zero. Because if you take an odd number of derivatives, then downstairs you will always have at least a j. So then when you set j to 0, you get 0. Another way to see is that the original integral was even. So if you have an expectation value of an odd observable, you get 0. Okay, so now let's apply this to our particular example. So we want to apply this to compute what is the propagator. So what is the expectation value of mij mkl? Okay? So let's do this. So apparently I'm not supposed to write here, right? Because this was written in such a way that it's impossible to erase. Okay. So what is this? And can I use this? I know, I can't even use this. Okay. So let's compute it. So let's write the propagator. So 1 over 2 g string squared trace of m squared. So what is this? This is, of course, 1 half. And then we have g string squared sum over I m I I squared. Okay. Plus 2 sum over I smaller than j real part of mij square plus 2 sum over I smaller than j imaginary part of mij square, which is a simple exercise if you don't believe me. But you actually can almost do it by head. Okay, and now using this and writing mij as real part plus imaginary part, we can easily compute the propagator, right? And we find that the propagator between mij and mkl is nothing but g string square times delta il delta jk. Okay? I confess I'm a bit confused by something, but okay. So on this, we can represent graphically as two lines. And we have the index I and j. We have the index L and k. And I and L are connected, and j and k are connected. And it's important to note that I connects with L and j connects with k, and not I with k and j with L, which is actually quite clear from this. Because if you have here imaginary, real plus imaginary, and real plus imaginary, this will be expectation value, real, real, minus imaginary, imaginary. And they would give the same propagator and give zero. So you need an opposite sign to give something. Yeah? Is it clear? Okay, it's simple to work it out. So now we can compute, so using this propagator, so is it clear that, of course, this is the most general case, and this matrix case, when I spell it out explicitly what these sums are, is just a particular case of what we have seen before. Right? I hope this is clear. Where just now the vector x's is all the entries of the matrix M. So let's compute an expectation value of some quantity, say trace of m to the 4. So this is the expectation value of sum over I, j, k, l, mij, mjk, mkl, mli. Right? Can you see if I continue writing here? Probably not. Can you see if I write here? No? More or less? Okay, tell me if you can see. Actually, I will try to raise it a bit. So what is this? So first, notice that what There is a nice graphical way of representing this. Where I have the indices I, J, J, K, K, L, L, I, and I can draw some arrows if I want.
Can you explain what the arrows on the lines mean?
It means if the index is the first index or the last index of the matrix. So, yeah. So the arrow goes from the first index and comes from the last index. So L is the last index of the matrix and goes to the first index of the matrix. J is the last index of the matrix and K is the first index of the matrix. Yeah? Now, this notation that we are using here, where we represent this, is what is called the fat line, the fat graph, or double line notation. So, and we will see why it is very useful to fatten our Feynman diagrams and to give them this extra structure, this extra ribbon structure. So what is this average then? This is the following. Let me write the result and then it will hopefully be clear. I, J, K, L. And now we need to weak contract. So now there are two possibilities. This guy can contract with this one, with the first one, or with the last one, or it can contract with the middle one. So the first and last one are equivalent, so there will be a factor of 2. Right? So if I contract the first with the second or the first with the last one, they are equivalent because the trace is cyclic. Right? So contracting the first with the second or the first with the last just means contracting two neighbors. So that's equivalent, yeah? So you get just 2 times the expectation value mij mjk times the expectation value mkl mli. So this comes from contracting like this or like this, and it's equivalent. Plus, then there is the contraction where we contract the m's like this, which I just get in that case m I j m k l contracted with m j k m l I. So this is equal to what? It's equal to sorry, let me think a bit. Okay, let's see. Okay. I remember. So, because I want to compute the expectation value of this trace of m to the 4, but I want to normalize this operator in the way that it would appear in the action, which will be the canonical normalization, which is one possibility when we normalize the action by putting 1 over the coupling times the Lagrangian without coupling. So let me compute, it's slightly more natural, let's compute 1 over g string squared times all this. Just at the end, the normalization comes out nicely. Comes out a bit nicer. This is the normalization that would appear more canonically from the action. Then what do we have? We have 1 over g string squared from normalization. Then we have g string squared because we have 2 propagators. And now let's see what we get from the index contraction. We have sum over I, J, K, L. And then we have this delta functions there. So there we have delta I, K, delta J, J from the first expectation. And the second expectation value this gives delta K, I, delta L, L. And then with a 2. And then there is plus delta I L delta jk delta ji delta kl. And what you see, what happens is the following. Here, because of delta jj, the sum over j gives n. Yes?
About the canonic normalization, don't we usually need a kind of kinetic curve in order to find out what the canonic normalization for the field is? I mean, here we have a mass term. But...
Yeah, very good. So, no, mass term or kinetic term is the same. Here, this is what I would call the kinetic term. Because there is no, there's no derivative. So really, m square is what controls the propagation. It's just the propagation is always between a point and itself. Right? It would be, I mean, the point, they are all here, and to propagate it would be something like that. But it's all, it is a propagate. But you are right, and one thing you can do, so let me rephrase, what's your name?
Robert.
So Robert is saying that one way of rephrasing what Robert is saying is, why don't we rescale this coupling so that this leading term, which gives the propagator, is just normalized to 1/2. So let's rescale m to be g times m, then this guy gets 1/2, and all the coupling comes to the vertices, right? And then we could repeat the analysis we are doing with that, if you want, more canonical normalization. At least some people might call it more canonical. That's the purpose of the exercise that you will have to do tomorrow. And you will see that you arrive exactly at the same conclusions that we are about to arrive now, of course. Okay, but let's just finish this computation again. This overall normalization is irrelevant, actually. So this factor here gives a power of n. This factor here gives a power of n. And when we sum these two, this becomes just delta ii, and then this gives a power of n. Whereas here, if you do all the sums, you see that all these sums do. Let's try to see. Okay, let's do it a bit slower. Let's say we do these sums, then we get delta ki. We do these ones, we get delta lk. And then if we do these ones, we get delta ll. And this delta ll gives a power of n. So when I'm done doing the sums, I get g string square times, from the first set of diagrams, I get 2n cubed. And from the second, I only get n. So if n is large, the first ones are much more important. So let's see graphically what was happening. What's happening is the following. Here, what did we do? We took the first guy. We had this vertex. And we decided, for this graph here, to connect neighbors. So we connected these two neighbors. And then we connected these two neighbors. Whereas here, what we decided to do was, we decided to connect non-neighbors. So we connected this guy, and we connected this guy, and then these lines, we connected them like that, and we connected them like that. Okay? So now let's count powers of n. And now it's very simple. You see, you get the power of n whenever you have a closed loop, right? Because whenever you have a closed loop, you sum and you get the power of n. So now it's trivial to see that you have 1, 2, 3 closed loops here. And that's why we get n cubed. Whereas here, if you try to follow this line, let's follow this line. So arrow, so now please look at me while I'm doing this. So let's follow this line. I have arrow here, arrow here, arrow here, arrow here, arrow here. It goes here, it goes here, it goes here, it goes there, it goes there, it goes there, it goes there. And I ended up where I was. So there's actually only one loop. So here there is only one loop, and this is why we get a single power of n. Actually, you can see that this diagram, it can be drawn on a sphere. I just add the sphere to the diagram. Whereas this diagram, it cannot be drawn on a sphere without crossing. But if I go to a torus, this diagram can be drawn in a torus without crossing. So let me try. So we have this, this. And you see that if I draw this on the torus, this diagram also does not cross. Therefore, this diagram, because it can be drawn on a plane, which is just a sphere with one more point, these are called planar graphs. This is a planar graph. Whereas these ones that you need to go to higher topologies to be able to draw them are called non-planar graphs. And actually what happens, and this is quite generic, and we will see this in a minute, is that planar graphs dominate over non-planar graphs, and there is a notion of separating all the Feynman diagrams into planar graphs, non-planar with genus 1, non-planar with genus 2, and so on. And that summation over the graphs of a given topology will match exactly our summation in string theory over strings of a given topology. And that's how we will see that strings will emerge directly from non-abelian gauge theories with a large number of colors. And the large number of colors is crucial so that we have this notion of some graphs being more important than other graphs. So let's consider just another example. And as another example, let's compute the expectation value. Again, I like to normalize the fields in this way, but of course to explain which diagrams are more important, an overall normalization is irrelevant. 1 over G string trace of M cube, 1 over G string trace of M cube. So now I'm computing a two-point function, and suppose I want to connect a two-point function. So I don't allow for contractions between the operator and himself. So this is equal to the expectation value. So one operator I represent like this, the other one I represent like this. And actually, another useful way of representing the operators that we'll use a lot is to represent the operators like this, where when I represent them like this, it should be clear that all these three points are at the same point in spacetime. And spacetime, actually, here there is only one point. But this is how you should think of this. So this is really equivalent to this. All it matters is the color indices, and the same information which is encoded here is encoded here. And this is another operator. So then, this correlation function will be given by the following graphs. We will have graphs where we just connect the propagators like this. Okay? Yes?
What is this C? This index C?
Connected. I want connected graphs. I don't want. If you want, I can. Let's normal order these operators so that we don't allow contractions between the operator and itself. And furthermore, it's connected. OK? Just so that I don't have to, I don't draw bubbles here and so on, just for simplicity, to have less graphs. So here, by the way, I said this is the full result. Of course, this is the average. Here, we only consider the propagators. So we can say we did not start computing when we lower these vertices, and then we start computing more complicated stuff. So actually, what I computed in the first example was an average in the Gaussian matrix model. So we only computed, of course, the average in the Gaussian matrix model, where the action is just M squared. Okay? So this was what we did there. But now suppose we are computing really in the generic matrix model. What kind of graphs we have? We have this one. Then we have graphs where we start using the vertices. And we can use the vertices, for example, to start drawing something like this, where now we use a three vertex here. Plus dot, dot, dot. Or we can represent graphs where we have something like this. Say. Let's now draw, just one sec. Let's just draw now, for example, a graph. Yes?
Why in second picture both sides have four legs?
It was a mistake. Sorry. Good. Plus ... Okay? And now what we want to claim is that these graphs here, where we have just these planar graphs, will be identified to summing over strings without holes. And these ones would be identified with summing over strings that have a hole in the middle that can be only drawn on a torus. And then the second line, I could have then graphs where the string has two holes and so on. So let's see why this is exactly what happens, why this is exactly correct, why I can claim that this cartoon is precise. And if I can, then I will justify this claim written here. So each diagram, let's see how each diagram in general contributes. Each diagram contributes as what? So we have G string. Square to the number of propagators. Is this clear? Each propagator contains a factor of G string. Is this clear? Because the action is normalized as 1 over G string square. So each propagator contains G string to the number of propagators. This we saw, that a propagator contains the power of G string square. Yeah? Is it clear or not?
No, I never saw why it
You did not see? Okay,
no.
Because if the action is normalized as 1 over G string, then a propagator will come with G string. This is just a consequence of the statement that the expectation value of two fields is given by the inverse of the matrix, A minus 1. So because you have A minus 1, say if you consider correlation function between MII and MII, for example, you get the inverse of this, which is the G squared. Okay? G string to the number of propagators. What about the vertices? Each vertex contributes in this normalization, which Robert doesn't like, but which is actually the one that in unabelian gauge theories people normally use. Each propagator contributes with 1 over G string square. Right? Is it clear? Whenever I have a vertex, it comes with minus 1 over G string. So minus number of vertices. Okay? And again, as I said, one of the goals of the tutorial will be to rescale the fields so that the kinetic term has coefficient 1/2, and then these guys will have powers of the coupling, which will depend on the power of M, and you will see that you will get exactly the same conclusion. Number of propagators minus number of vertices, and then we have N times the number of closed loops. Okay? But now, I remind you of Euler's theorem for graphs that tells you that whenever you have a graph, whenever you have such graph, the number of, this is equivalent to the number of edges, these are vertices, V, and this the number of closed lines I can call faces, how many faces I have. It's like how many pieces of glass I would need if these were windows. So here I need one window, two windows, and then an exterior part of glass, which is three windows. You see? Three pieces of glass. One, two, three. Here I only need one, a very contrived one, but only one. I only have one boundary. It will be some funny shape. So this would be the number of faces. Now, E minus V minus F is equal to 2G minus 2. So if you tell me the number of edges, vertices, and faces, I can tell you the topology. Let's just check. Hopefully it will work. So here, for example, we have E equal, how many edges we have? We have 1, 2. Vertices equal to 1. Faces equal to 3. And genus is 0. Does it work? Edges is 2. 2 minus 1 is 1. 1 minus 3 is minus 2. 0 minus 2 is minus 2. Yeah, it works. Oof. Now, what about this one? This one has E equal, how many edges? Again, 1, 2, it has 2 propagators. How many vertices? 1. How many faces? 1. And the genus is 1. And indeed, 2 minus 1 minus 1 is 0, and the genus is indeed 1. And this is actually a general property of graphs. So that means that an expectation value, okay, will be given by a sum of g string times the power 2g minus 2. Okay? So I will sum and subtract faces here. So I subtract faces and I add faces, times a function that depends now only on the genus. I sum over the genus, and that function will only be a function of lambda, where lambda is g string square times n. Okay? So is it clear? And this combination, g string square times n, is a very famous combination, and this is what is called the Tuft coupling. Okay? So if you fix the genus, which is you choose to sum over this first line, then all this first line gives is a fixed power of g strings and then some power of lambda, where lambda is the Tuft coupling. Yes?
Inside the first bracket, should it be g string squared with a total power of 2g minus 2?
Yeah. I don't like this g string square. Let's make. Okay? In everything which is above. I think this was a mistake. Okay? Okay. Yeah, because there's no square there, right? In the formula that I wrote there. But now we see that we have exactly a string theory. We sum over the genus that these graphs are drawing. And you see that the more vertices you have, the more of a surface you will be drawing. Okay? And then for a given genus, you still have to sum over as many vertices that you have. But that's exactly summing over the world sheet, summing over different shapes that go from a point to another. Okay? So once you fix the topology, you fix the power of G-string, and then you still have the sum over how many vertices you have, and that is nothing but summing over all these quantum fluctuations of the string. So lambda will be directly related to the string tension. And G string will be the string coupling. Yeah, when I said I was confused, I was exactly already anticipating this G string square was coming out wrong. Okay. Any question here?
But if you make a replacement and replace g squared, gs squared by gs, then we also change the top coupling.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, it would be gs times n. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's whatever you call coupling. I called coupling what was there. Yeah. That's right, yeah. So I replace everything. This means everything so written so far, in particular the definition of the Tuft coupling, which is fine. Okay. So this is the basic idea. I mean, this is the basic take-home message from today, which is that if we consider theories with a very large number of colors, Feynman diagrams organize themselves into groups depending on the topology that is being drawn by these graphs. And these different topologies, they are more and more suppressed, the highest the genus of these graphs. And this sum over topologies is exactly a way of defining, if you want, string theory. So we can even think of gauge theories, of non-abelian gauge theories, as our best definition, if you want, of string theory. Another comment that I should make is that D equals zero was just for simplicity. So we can very well replace m squared by some dm dm, and everything would go through. The only difference is that now these graphs here, they would not be so trivial to compute. I would have to integrate over these space-time points and so on. And it would, this integration over space-time points would be a mess to compute. But concerning powers of n, everything I said would go through. So having a four-dimensional or a three-dimensional gauge theory just makes the computation of Feynman diagrams more complicated. But the conclusion that the Feynman diagrams describe a string theory is, of course, universal. So now, one more comment is, of course, that since we fixed that stuffed coupling, I could also, if you want, rewrite that relation as, this is comment number one, and comment number two is that, of course, I can also write an expectation value as a sum over the genus n to the 2 minus 2 genus times a function that depends on the genus and depends on lambda. Okay? This is just an obvious. an obvious consequence of that. So in particular, and one thing, you see, you notice that this is why it is nice to normalize the operators in exactly the same way as it appears in the action. Then, when we insert operators with the same normalization of the action, they can be treated exactly as vertex operators. So we don't have to be careful about how many operators are we inserting. Because putting operators, there's no distinction between these two external operators and these two external operators and these two vertices. They are treated in equal footing. So I will not get different normalization depending on how many external points I have, provided I always normalize them with this 1 over g string square, which is the way they appear in the action, right? Otherwise, it would be straightforward. I would say that the number, I would have here n operators, and then there will be some trivial rescaling, which will depend on the number of operators that I have, right? But because I normalize them with 1 over g string square, this formula is universal, and I never need to worry about how many operators are there inside the dot, dot, dot. Is this clear? Yeah? Because again, from the point of view of drawing diagrams, you will never notice if this came from the action or if it was already there.
But right? That function should somehow depend on what's inside the interaction.
Oh, absolutely. 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 That's totally true. That is a function that we need to compute. It will be a string S matrix. For three particles, it will be a three string S matrix. For four particles, a four string S matrix. Of course, it will depend on the external states. In particular, a consequence of this is that if we consider four operators normalized in this nice way, and if we consider a connected correlation function, this always scales like n squared, the leading order, plus subleading. Okay? Also, so suppose each of these O's is something like this, for example. Also, we notice something. We notice that if we consider not a connected one, but the general one, then these guys, they will want to decompose into a correlation function OO times a correlation function OO. So instead of, so the, these guys, they will like to just decompose into a product of two two-point functions. Because you see, each one is of power n squared, so I have n squared instead of n squared. So I have n to the 4 instead of n squared. So it will be this plus the connected part. So when we have four operators, they want to decompose and they want to factorize in the large n limit. So this is very important and what is called large n factorization. So these guys are of order n to the 4. They are much bigger than this guy, which is of order n squared. And this large n factorization is the statement that strings are nearly free for n going to infinity. So the statement that if I have four strings, indeed it's very intuitive. Naively, these strings just want two of them to move together and not interact with the other one. And when they start interacting, this is a subleading effect. So this is just the statement that the strings, they prefer to move freely. One second. This is much bigger than the configuration where the strings start interacting, which is again very intuitive. Yes?
Why is that the 4-point correlation of connected diagrams goes like n squared?
Because we explained here that any correlation function goes like n to the 2 minus 2g. So the leading one is when genus is equal to 0 is n squared. So any connected correlation function of anything, not only of 4, of anything, if it's connected, it starts with n squared. That's the leading power. Okay? So any correlation function goes like n squared. Which is good if it's connected. If it's disconnected, no. What happens is that when it's disconnected, of course, from the point of view of Feynman diagrams, when we have disconnected, we get extra boundaries. Because now we have two graphs, so we have extra boundaries, so we gain loops of n. It's clear that a diagram which is disconnected contains more boundaries. So then, let's do a simple exercise. Let's compute, say, the connected three-point function, okay, that of course goes like n squared. And let's compute this connected three-point function properly normalized, so that the two-point function is 1. In other words, when we divide by the two-point function to the power 3/2. This is like we are normalizing the two-point function, normalizing each of the operators. Then, of course, this quantity goes like 1 over n. If we compute the connected correlation function of four guys, divided normalizing the two-point function of each of them, then this goes like 1 over n squared, etc. Okay? Now, we want to claim that these guys, so we want to claim, later we will try to claim, that an operator is dual to a single string. This is very natural. We have seen already that each operator can be seen as a string that is propagating from one point to the other. This we see clearly from the Feynman diagrams. In particular, in string theory, we will have a regime, say, where we will have these single strings describing, say, classical gravity, where we have gravitons of string theory. And in particular, we could imagine a limit where these string theories are effectively described by some gravity. Yeah? This is clear? So when this is the case, let's see what happens. So imagine we have some gravity action. And this gravity, I remind you, is 1 over g newton integral over the dimensions of some fields. Okay? So when we consider, say, a four-point function of this graviton, so the gravitons are propagating and so on, how does this guy scale? If we consider this guy, how does it scale? This one divided by the two-point function properly normalized. So there are four external states, so we divide by the two-point function to the power of 4 over 2. How does it go? Well, we have, say, two vertices. So we get 1 over g newton square from the vertices. We have 5 propagators upstairs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we get g newton to the power 5. And downstairs, we have 1 propagator, so g newton to the power 4 over 2. And this goes like g newton. Okay, so it's 3 minus 4 is g newton. Similarly, if you consider not an interaction of 4, but an interaction of 3, divided again by the properly normalized two-point function to normalize it properly, you can easily see that this goes like square root of g newton. So we are led to the identification that we will later encounter when we will do this in a more rigorous way, that somehow the g newton should be identified with 1 over n squared. And this, we will see, turns out to be an exact identification. Okay, so what we will see tomorrow is that large n theories are simpler. Sometimes, if we have a large n theory, we saw already that there is this notion of the diagrams, they organize themselves into a string theory. We see the genus expansion, and we see that there is indeed a string theory flavor. Now you might ask, okay, is it possible to now try to make this a bit more rigorous and derive some action for the string and so on? No, no one was able. So why am I telling you this? This is just motivation. I'm just trying to convey that there should be some string description. But this is never the way people find the string description. It's never by starting with some gauge theory, drawing the diagram, seeing that they organize into surfaces, trying to derive what's the action for these surfaces. No one was ever able to make this rigorous. There are some attempts, but this basically never worked. It's just too hard. But again, the purpose of these first lectures, of the first two or three lectures, is just to give you motivation to believe that it is not crazy to conjecture that some gauge theories are dual to string theories. And we see that indeed, the diagrams that appear, the organization of Feynman diagrams, is exactly the organization of our best definitions of string theory. This is one thing. The other thing, which is what we are going to see tomorrow, is that theories which have this large n theory, because of this large n theory, sometimes they can even be exactly solvable. Ignoring now string theory, just taking some large n model, some theory with a large number of colors, and because the number of colors is very large, we will see that actually we can actually solve this theory. Okay? So we will see, for example, that expectation values in certain matrix models can be computed exactly. So we can resum all these Feynman graphs and compute exactly those functions of the coupling, those fg of lambda. So that's the purpose of tomorrow's lecture. And in tomorrow's tutorial complements what we have seen today. So actually, tomorrow's tutorial would be perfect to be done today, but I guess maybe you can hand over the tutorial and those who want could start playing with it today. Okay? I put it in Dropbox, the revised version. Okay, thank you.